Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, can this man please stop tweeting, Lord Jesus? President Donald Trump tweets more stupid stuff over the weekend when it comes to fired FBI Director James Comey, even calls him a coward. No, coward is when you can't apologize to President Barack Obama for lying about being not born in the United States. So we'll talk about, again, the continual fallout over James Comey's testimony and what is next. Also on the show, Supreme Court has repeatedly refused to overturn a lower court's ruling that North Carolina's voting laws discriminate against black folk. We will talk with Reverend Dr. William J. Barber about that right here on the show. Also, very few black folks are elected statewide across this country. Well, in Virginia tomorrow, Justin Fairfax will take the first step in trying to become Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. He will join us on the simulcast with the Tom Jonah Morning Show. Also, the defense will soon get their turn in the Bill Cosby sexual assault trial. We'll talk with the reporter who is covering the comedian's trial and what to expect this week. Also, in Homicide Plays Chicago, new data shows that police departments that they are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to settle police misconduct cases, costing taxpayers tons and tons of money. Wait till we tell you about this new report. Also, folks on the show, two organizations have declared this as hashtag Disarm Hate Week to honor the victims of the Pulse nightclub massacre and other victims of hate crimes. We'll hear from the mother of Jordan Davis on the show. All right, folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. All right, y'all. President Donald Trump denied charges made by fired FBI Director James Comey in front of Congress, detailing private conversations he had with the president, where Trump allegedly asked him for his loyalty and urged him to quash the investigation into ousted National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. Now, Trump, of course, also will not answer the question as to whether or not he actually has tape recordings of the conversations. You might recall he tweeted that. Now, all of a sudden, well, he's clamming up.
About that maybe sometime in the very near future. But in the meantime, no collusion, no obstruction. He's a leaker. We are doing really well. That was an excuse by the Democrats who lost an election that some people think they shouldn't have lost. But we were very, very happy. And frankly, James Comey confirmed a lot of what I said. And some of the things that he said just weren't true.
He did say under oath that you told him to let the Flynn, or you said you hoped the Flynn investigation, you could let
he could I didn't let go. Say that.
So he lied about that.
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, I will tell you, I didn't say that.
And did he ask you to pledge his
And there'd
loyalty?
Be nothing wrong if I did say it, according to everybody that I've read today, but I did not say that.
And did he ask for a pledge of loyalty from you? That's another thing he said.
No, he did not.
So he said those things under oath. Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of those events? 100%.
I didn't say under oath. I hardly know the man. I'm not going to say, I want you to pledge allegiance. Who would do that? Who would ask a man to pledge allegiance under oath? I mean, think of it. I hardly know the man. It doesn't make sense. No, I didn't say that, and I didn't say the other.
In several tweets, Trump accused Comey of illegally leaking his notes of their 9 encounters, both in person and on the phone. Comey told Congress he asked a friend to share the memos with the media because he felt Trump's conversations with him were inappropriate, and he wanted a special counsel to be appointed to investigate the Russian probe. Now we have that. Of course, despite so many false statements and lies, total and complete vindication. And wow, Comey is a leaker. Total and complete vindication, really? I believe the James Comey leaks will be far more prevalent than anyone ever thought possible. Totally illegal, very cowardly. Really, dude? Former New York U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, who was fired by Trump in March, a day after he refused to take his phone call, said the leak issue was a non-starter.
It sounds like more of a distraction. First of all, I think nothing that was in the memo or in the conversations he had with his friend at Columbia Law School was classified. Second, I don't understand what the privilege argument is. The president's team fully was aware that the memo was going to be discussed and the conversations were going to be discussed at the hearing, and had the opportunity, when many reporters asked if they would invoke executive privilege to try to prevent some of that from being talked about, and they declined that opportunity.
Tomorrow, Attorney General Jeff Sessions was supposed to talk in an open hearing on Capitol Hill, but now he wants to do it in private. I wonder why. Let's go to our panel. We have, of course, Eugene Craig to my right, CEO of the Eugene Craig Organization, Republican out of Maryland. To my left, A. Scott Bolgen, attorney and former chair of D.C. Democratic Party. Long Victoria Burke, political analyst and writer for NBC Black. On the show for the first time, George Farrell, founder of Black Pack and author of Success is Colorblind. All right, Eugene. Your guy just keeps lying.
Look, man. Look. I think, you know, I'll put it this way. The best meme tweet I've seen out of this whole thing, are we either going to believe the guy that served three presidents in three different, you know, positions with the Department of Justice, or the guy that said Barack Obama was born in Kenya? I mean, I think this is an open shut case at this point. I mean, it's getting out of control. I mean, the guy's lying. You know what I mean? But look, he's agreed to essentially be deposed. By either Congress or former FBI Director Mueller. Let's see where it goes.
George, it was quite interesting in that Trump's lawyers, former lawyers, said they used to have to go to him in pairs because he would lie. They did. And he gave one deposition where he literally lied 30 times in the deposition. We use the stinger. Get it ready. So George may not have seen this.
Oh, yeah.
Eric, Trump Lies Matter, but he lies like other people breathe.
Well, I think he embellishes.
No, lies.
Well, let's let the court decide what a lie is. Like Bill Clinton, lies. But
No. We know Bill Clinton lies. But we don't have to let the court decide. We can decide right here. You got any children?
I have children.
Right. So you ain't never said you. When last time you ever told your children? What did he just say? Have you ever told your kid? Son or daughter?
I have three daughters and one son.
You have three daughters and one son. When your son came to you, you said, son, you're embellishing. No, you said, son, stop lying.
So actually, I stopped because I get so angry, I had to stop and take a breath.
Well, why don't you?
So I'm taking a breath right now.
Why don't you stop taking a breath right now? Because you know he lied.
Roland, I'm just going to say, let this play out in the Supreme Court. Let's see where it goes. Trump has this weird way of being protected. I don't know how it works. He predicts something. He talked about the Mexican border. Nobody believed it. Next thing you know, it was true. So he has this way of saying things.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the criminals coming across the border and committing crimes and staying in the United States.
I think other people knew that there were people
who actually committed
crimes in the country.
No one brought that to the forefront.
Okay, first of all, that's deflection. That's a nice try, but that don't work on this show.
Okay.
He's lying.
I'm not going to.
He lied. No.
Okay.
He lied about the tapes. Why can't he say yes or no? Do tapes exist?
He said he's going to explain it later.
Why can't he say right now? Yes,
well,
I have.
I'm not
tapes.
His press
no,
secretary.
I don't have tapes.
I cannot answer that for the administration. But I will say that. I said let's wait. He said let's wait.
We ain't waiting because bottom line is lies are stacking up, Lauren.
Yeah, there's a problem. I mean, you know, when we all find out about this, of course, when Robert Mueller really gets going, the caliber of prosecution, the caliber of the prosecutors that he's hiring would indicate that there's going to be a huge problem.
Attorneys on constitutional issues.
Right. And not only strong attorneys on constitutional issues, but attorneys have handled much more complicated cases than this. You're talking mafia cases and flipping mobsters and stuff that these guys are child's play. I mean, there's a New York tough strain going through, and as somebody born in the Bronx, I'll say this, there's an idea in the White House that, hey, we can just bully everybody. Okay, yeah. Let's try that with Bob Mueller. It's not going to work.
Scott?
So,
yeah. It's not even a close contest on credibility. As a former prosecutor in New York, one of the things we were taught, and whether you're federal or local, is lies have no details.
Mm-hmm.
And so Comey's memo has lots of details, and lawyers write memos after lots of different meetings because they want to do it contemporaneously. Now, you juxtapose that with Donald Trump, and Donald Trump's defense and bullying have no details whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
He's a leaker, which was a bizarre.
He's
a leaker. Hold on a second. He's a leaker, real quick. He's a leaker, and then collusion. There was no collusion. I've been completely vindicated. There are no details in that. And those are lies because they're falsities because collusion wasn't even part of the discussion with James Comey.
Well, here's what I love. He lied, but I was vindicated.
But I'm vindicated for your lies.
He admits what he cannot deny and denies what he cannot admit.
Speaking of lying, let's talk about Republicans in North Carolina who keep lying when it comes to voter suppression.
It's
of course,
lying, sure.
They've gotten their behinds beat four times in the courts. Voting rights advocates four, Republican North Carolina lawmakers zero. Supreme Court has refused to overturn a federal district court's ruling that North Carolina state districts were drawn based on race and violated equal protection principles. One of the folks who's been fighting that big time, Reverend William J. Barber, of course, state president of the North Carolina NAACP. He joins us right now. Reverend Barber, how you doing?
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Y'all ain't lying.
y'all been whipping the behind the Republicans in North Carolina who keep trying to rig this system because they are afraid to death of black folks voting like they did in 2008 and 2012.
Well, indeed. I mean, and this whole thing you said about Trump is, you know, this whole brand of politics lied. In North Carolina 2010, they lied and said that they were passing fair redistricting. We've been fighting for seven straight years. You know, they lied and said that voter suppression was about voter protection, but we knew it was a lie. And people even said that they thought, listen, well, y'all are just marching and going to jail. But we had to dramatize what was going on. That was one strategy. We had a legislative agenda, and we had a legal agenda, and they were all connected. And it took 7 years, Roland. But now the courts have said four straight Mondays, back-to-back after 7 years, number one, they said that the voter suppression was for voter suppression. It was not about, and it was racist voter suppression. And it was not just photo ID. It was across the board, even rolling back same-day registration, early voting. And look, even Clarence Thomas had to agree. They lied so bad, Clarence Thomas couldn't even stand
with it. Now, when Clarence Thomas agree on the issue of race, boy, you know it's some serious racism going on.
Racism, when, right, we often say when the racist has to say the racist is racist. Serious racism. And then they came back. Now, this is the Roberts Court. I want your audience. This is the court we were fearing. But they were so bad in their vote, in their redistricting, gerrymandering, apartheid-like gerrymandering, that the court said unanimously, Roland, and this is almost unheard of, a unanimous decision, where they said unanimously. Hello?
Yep, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, they said unanimously that it was racist gerrymandering, which means the other lie is that we didn't lose in North Carolina. We haven't been losing. We've been cheated. Because what they were afraid of is black voters, brown voters, and progressive white voters coming together. After 2008, when President Obama won North Carolina and it showed you could break through the solid South, they became so afraid that they did everything they could. And now they're being forced to redraw. The governor called a special session, and you know what? They lied again. They said, well, we don't have any direction, so we're not going to redraw the lines.
Well,
so the courts are going to have to do it.
Reverend Barbara, first of all, keep it up. Keep kicking butt. We'll keep focusing the attention on this as well, fighting voter suppression left and right.
Yes, sir. We're on it. Thank you,
I appreciate it, Alpha Man. Thanks.
One step back.
All right. Thanks a bunch. George, what's up with your Republicans? They keep getting their behinds kicked, and they keep lying. It's pure voter suppression. They do not want black folks voting in North Carolina like they did in 2008.
I want black folks voting. I work to get black folks voting. If Justice Thomas, a Republican, said this is racist, I agree with him.
Okay, but why is it though that, and I'm waiting for black Republicans to stand up as a collective in mass to call out what's happening in North Carolina.
I will call it out.
No,
I will call
up.
It out.
George, you are about the 10th black Republican who's come on my show saying, as an individual, I'm calling out. I'm saying.
No, as a group of black pack.
No,
I work to elect black people in North Carolina.
Okay,
I work to get voters out
okay,
of North Carolina
so,
as a group.
So when is the news conference that y'all are going to have in North Carolina or the National Press Club or outside of the Republican National Committee in D.C. as a group of black Republicans?
Will you stand
out
with me? I'll do the press conference.
I don't stand with you. I cover it.
You cover
I'm
it?
I'm telling you right now.
Okay.
If y'all have a news conference.
Let me tell you,
most districts in America are gerrymandered. It's not just North Carolina. We fight this across the country. If y'all have a news conference in front of the Republican National Committee calling on the RNC, calling on Trump, calling calling on others to condemn the consistent voter suppression in North Carolina.
Wherever there is evidence of it, I stand against it.
There's evidence, dude.
There's evidence in North Carolina.
There's evidence of it.
There's evidence of it in Florida. We have some of the most gerrymandered districts in Florida.
George,
I'm just Florida. No, I just heard. I agree with him.
Did you not read the federal ruling where they said there was a laser-like precision in the targeting of black voters? You already got your evidence.
I got evidence. I have evidence in Florida, Jacksonville to Orlando, very gerrymandered. That district has to be withdrawn. I work against this every day, Roland. I'm not saying I agree with it. I work against it.
And what I'm saying is this here, I want to see these folks condemned in North Carolina because it's shameful.
It's Republican policy. Voter suppression is Republican policy.
Right.
So, I mean, the idea that any group within the Republican Party will go against it, that's
I go against it.
Okay, George.
Then go against it. Then go against it.
Let me know when that news conference is held.
Let us know when the news conference happens.
I will call you first. Running for Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. It'll be next right here, News 1-9.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
For them, but Tom, I'll be very clear. Black folks are not taking back the N-word. I don't receive trash. I don't want
the
trash.
Same thing. Yeah.
And so he's like, well, we're taking it back. No, y'all, white folks can keep the N-word. So that's some trash I don't want. So I can't tell you why Bill Maher's folks refused to book me back on the show. But it was interesting, though. I know he had a problem when I was on, Tom, when I actually looked at my phone and he thought I was looking at Twitter. But I was actually double-checking a fact from a rape survivor who I interviewed. And I told him that, and I'm going, but you got blue cards in front of you with damn notes on it. So I can look at notes as well. So I would have loved to go on Bill Maher's show. But let me just say, it would not have went the same way.
I know.
Hello. I'm just saying, it would not have went the same way. And I'm going to do a commentary tomorrow on this further. On that show, and then what was said on it. So I'm gonna.
Now, where can we hear your commentary?
Oh, that's gonna be. It's gonna be on TV One. We're gonna put it on social media. We're gonna podcast. Oh, you're gonna hear it. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're gonna hear it. Don't worry about it. Now we'll see it the Black America Web as well.
Thank you.
First of all, Tom, real quick. Phenomenal celebration for my parents, 50th wedding anniversary on Saturday. Reginald and Imelda Martin, 50 years of marriage. The OJs killed it, Tom.
Yeah.
Parents had no idea Eddie, Walter, and Eric were going to show up. So it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. So I want to give them that shout out. All right, Tom, we got some business tomorrow in Virginia. They have their primaries tomorrow. And you know right now, Tom, there are very few black folks elected statewide. We have no black governors. As lieutenant governor in Maryland, who's a Republican, but he was elected with Hogan, so he never actually ran independently. There are very few of us elected statewide. Well, in Virginia, Justin Fairfax is trying to become lieutenant governor. The campaign is tomorrow. The election is tomorrow in Virginia. They're expecting an extremely low turnout. He joins us right now. Justin, good to see you.
Roland, great to see you.
You previously ran for attorney general.
I did.
Almost won.
We
lost by how many votes?
A little less than 5,000 votes. We won nearly 49% of the statewide vote and got endorsed by the Washington Post.
But you're making it's difficult for black folks running statewide. and not only that, it's difficult for black Democrats.
Right.
The Democratic Party does not really do a lot for black folks running statewide. And you even had to fight the Democratic Party in Virginia.
Yeah, unfortunately, we did have a situation last year where there were folks who attacked us as we were running for office. And we've been tremendously supportive of the party. I have co-chaired Senator Mark Warner's campaign in 2014 for Senate reelection. Even after our close loss in 2013, we've raised money, we've traveled the state. And so we think this is a really incredible opportunity to break through. To make sure that issues are represented that really matter to people, criminal justice reform, economic security and opportunity. We want more folks to be able to go to college, to get middle skill jobs, to get technical and vocational training. And that's really what we represented here in this race. And I thank you for highlighting this opportunity. It'd be the first time since Governor Doug Wilder that an African-American was elected statewide, if we're fortunate enough to win.
So out of all the statewide positions in Virginia, since Doug Wilder, no African-American has been elected to any statewide office.
That's correct. It's been about 30 years. And so we believe that obviously, you know, that presents a significant opportunity. And again, the issues that we have focused on are issues that really go to the heart of whether or not someone can achieve the American dream. I mean, this is something that you fight for, and Tom Joyner, and I thank him for having us on as well. They focus on, you know, college scholarships. We have some incredible HBCUs in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Virginia Union, Virginia State, Norfolk State.
I'm actually wearing the Norfolk State lapel pin today.
Very good. Go Spartans.
For hashtag HBCU Giving Day.
Absolutely. And that's powerful. And you all, again, everything that you focus on is making sure that more folks, no matter where they start, color their skin, where they were born, that they get a chance to have economic mobility and achieve the American dream. And that's really what our campaign has been about from day
most
one.
Most states, lieutenant governor has no power. So what does lieutenant governor actually do? You got any power in there?
Absolutely. You have a lot of power.
Do you go to funerals or something?
Hopefully we'll go to more weddings and births than funerals. But in Virginia, lieutenant governor presides over the state Senate. So that's really a powerful position. You actually break ties. In the case of a tie-breaking vote, we have a relatively closely divided Senate, 21 Republicans and 19 Democrats. But you also sit on a number of boards and commissions where you help shape public policy for the state around economic development, climate change issues, higher education access, criminal justice reform. And so these are things, again, that we have highlighted. And you really can use that position to advance people's opportunities to move up the economic ladder, again, and achieve the American dream. So that's what I would do in that position as lieutenant governor.
Are there any other African Americans running statewide in Virginia?
None.
You're the only one on the ballot.
That's correct. That is correct.
You're our only shot.
That is correct. And so hopefully, you know, people will turn out tomorrow. As you mentioned, June 13th is the election. 4 years ago, even though we got nearly 49% of the vote, the turnout statewide was only 3%.
Whoa. Statewide?
3%. 3%. Wow. So 97% of people stayed home in that election.
It is a shame.
And what I like to say is that 100% of people vote in every election. It just matters how you vote. If you stay home and sit on the couch, what you're saying is that you're fine with the status quo. You're fine that Virginia is number one in the school-to-prison pipeline. You're fine that we have not expanded Medicaid in the Commonwealth of Virginia and covered 400,000 Virginians. You're fine that people are struggling to deal with crushing student loan debt, to get access to capital, to start and grow a small business, to reform our broken, discriminatory, and ineffective criminal justice system. And so people have to come out and make their voices heard. And 3% won't get us change, but if more people come out tomorrow, we will get that change.
Tom has a question.
Roland, how's the brother doing in the polls?
I can tell you, doing very well. You've raised more money than anybody else.
We have. Raised over $1 million in the election, which is far more than anyone else. Absolutely. So thank you all for your support. And also from more than 4,000 donors. And so we have gotten support from an incredible.
What are the polls looking like?
Our internal polls have us up. It's going to be a tight race as we see it right now.
How many people are running?
There are two other folks running, so it's a three-way primary. But we have been endorsed by Congressman Donald McEachin out of Richmond, Congressman Jerry Connolly out of Northern Virginia.
Justin Fairfax, have you been in touch with Governor Wilder, or has he been in touch with you?
Yes, I have, and he's wonderful. He's actually someone who I talk to fairly frequently.
Has he endorsed anyone?
He's not endorsed yet in the race. He's given me a lot of personal encouragement and advice. I will tell you, Congressman Bobby Scott, we just learned, voted for us and informed us that he has voted for us at the polls. And so we have three out of the four Democratic congressmen who have supported us. We have over 100 elected officials statewide who have endorsed us. We had a number of straw polls around the state that we won. And so people really are engaged. There's a powerful energy around our campaign. And it's really focused on that change and make sure more folks have a shot at the American dream.
Black folks in Virginia. Go ahead, Silva, go ahead.
No, you gotta up that 3%.
Yeah. But here's the deal. If only 3% vote, that means black turnout alone could very well be the difference maker. So black folks in Virginia, get off your butts and go vote tomorrow.
Yeah,
let's go, Virginia. Come on now.
Absolutely. Please come out. You got a lot at stake.
Virginia.
Virginia's for voters now, I think.
It is for voters. And it's for change and lovers, too. So.
Good luck, man. Change and lovers.
For change and lovers.
25 past the hour.
All right, then. Thanks a lot. All right, Jess, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roland. God bless you.
All right, thank you very much. All right, y'all. Coming up next on News One Now, Bill Cosby's defense. They're getting ready to put their case on. We'll hear from a reporter who's covering this case in the courtroom. That's next, News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, y'all. Today marks week two of Bill Cosby's sexual assault trial, and jurors will begin hearing the defense's case when court resumes later this morning. The 79-year-old Cosby is charged with drugging and molesting Andrea Constant at his Pennsylvania home in 2004. No charges were filed at the time, but prosecutors reopened the case in 2015 after learning that Cosby had acknowledged in a lawsuit filed by Constant that he gave women wine and pills before sexual encounters with them. It is not yet clear whether Cosby will take the stand in his own defense. He previously told Michael Smirkonish, a radio talk show host out of Philadelphia, that he was not going to testify. But then last week, word leaked out from the defense that he could very well testify. Let's go back to our panel. Of course, A. Scott Boulding, Eugene Craig, Law and Victoria Burke, George Farrell. Scott, I want to start with you as the resident lawyer on our panel here. A couple of things. One, Cosby says for early on, I'm not going to testify. Now, he might testify. I've talked to some other lawyers who said that often says that the defense is not going well when they're saying might have to put our guy on the stand.
Well, it depends on what they think. But remember, I've been saying that Cosby may testify. As a criminal defense lawyer and having prosecuted sex crimes before, you look to see how strong the government's case is and their witnesses. In this case, Constant was pretty strong. Her mom was pretty strong. Defense scored their points. But at the end of the prosecution's case, now this is the big issue because Cosby, as a celebrity, is very hard to convict. Celebrities, politicians, police officers, the jury will want him to look at them and tell them he didn't do this.
But you also have no evidence. I mean, literally, this trial is literally her word, the mother's word, against Bill Cosby's word.
But it's about more than that. It's a 13-year-old case. Constant waited a year. Her stories were inconsistent with the police. And the key witness for the defense in this case will be the former prosecutor for in the Philadelphia or that jurisdiction, who the judge is going to allow to testify as to what Constant told him, the holes in her story, and why he declined to prosecute. That's going to be a powerful witness for the defense.
Got to ask you this also, the lawyer who is leading the trial for Bill Cosby. Again, she's never done a criminal trial. She's never done a civil trial. To put your hands in somebody who's never done a criminal trial.
Yeah, but that's strategy. And she's not leading the defense. There's another gentleman.
He's second to her. She's actually leading the defense.
Well, if she's leading the defense, strategically, they wanted her to do the direct and cross of Constant. But I'm going to tell you, they've got seasoned criminal defense lawyers in Philadelphia who are representing, who are in court, and they're driving the defense strategy. Regardless, you're right about one thing. It's going to be all about credibility. And by the way, if defense can meet the prosecution's case and it's a toss-up in regard to credibility, he wins. Because they've got to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt.
All they have to do is get one juror. And for them to get one juror to say not guilty should be fairly easy. The problem, of course...
But to hold out. That one juror's got to hold out.
But getting the one juror to hold out has happened a million times.
But if you're Cosby, you want 12 to say not guilty.
Right. Well, I think
that... You may want that, but you don't need that.
I think the defense...
All you need is one.
The threshold for the defense is obviously in their favor. But the problem was that Andrea Constant, like you just said, her testimony and her mother's testimony is extremely compelling. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they can't put Cosby on the staff is Cosby's guilty. And once he gets on the stand and you get the cross, it's game over.
Well,
they can't put him on the stand.
Guilty.
George,
you get 49 people saying the same thing. I don't think so.
They
would be brutal.
Sex always has consequences. There's no free sex. So what Bill Cosby did, it needs to be a lesson to people for their future to make good decisions. And what I want people to cut out of this is that you can't just go around having sex with anybody or doing anything because it will come back to haunt you with Tiger Woods, with Bill Cosby, with Bill Clinton. Everybody thinks they can do this in secret. It will always come out. I think that's the lesson to come out of this Bill Cosby Clinton, because this has been going on for a long time.
Hold on, Joe. Ain't the problem having sex. The point is, you don't sexual assault anybody.
Okay.
You don't rape anybody. Hold on. You keep mentioning Bill Clinton.
Bill
in the case of Bill Clinton, you don't sit here and you're married and then you have sex, then you lie about it. So now you're committing perjury, Eugene.
You know, the issue isn't about having sex. It's just sexual assault. I mean, I do think, you know, we look at college campuses.
Alleged sexual assault.
Alleged.
Well, look, the issue, I'm sorry.
Not from
a legal...
One second, go ahead.
Now, there are groupies. There are groupies.
Hold up. One second. One second. Go ahead.
We do have a sexual assault issue in this country. Now, from the issue of Bill Cosby, I do think the most compelling testimony is going to be the former district attorney, you know, on the reason why he did not pursue charges years ago. And the fact that this current district attorney literally waited to literally the last minute, the last day of the last minute, to file these charges.
Yeah, but remember, the current DA ran against the former DA, and the current DA made this case the centerpiece of his election campaign.
Absolutely.
And so he, of course, was going to file.
It's a political prosecution.
He was going to file against Bill Cosby because
you think it's a political prosecution.
I'm saying the way it's playing out, it's a political prosecution.
If Cosby gets on the stand, Roland.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What?
Is it?
No, Lauren. In the case here, this DA did make this centerpiece of his campaign.
I can't believe this.
And then,
if this was Kirk Douglas or somebody, this would have happened already.
There
would have been a prosecution already. We want to defend Bill Cosby.
Wait one second. You said if it was Kirk Douglas.
You think it's a political prosecution? You think he was prosecuted because he's Bill Cosby?
No. I'm stating a fact. The current DA used.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
One second.
It was a political prosecution.
No, that's what he said. I'm stating what is fact.
All right, I'm just checking.
No,
just checking.
I'm stating what is No, one second. No. What I don't do on here is don't play games.
I'm just
say
asking.
Fact.
I'm not playing games. I'm saying
what he said. The current district attorney, when he ran against the former DA, the one who chose not to file the charges against Cosby, he used his failure to file charges against Cosby as a centerpiece of his campaign. And when the current DA was elected, you are correct. On the last day, he had to file charges in order because of the statute of limitations. That is also a fact. That's actually what happened.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Just check.
The problem
that's
Bill Cosby.
No, those are just facts.
The problem with Bill Cosby, if he does take the stand, his prior deposition testimony as a general proposition that he gives, what's been written, it's admitted already. But his
portions of it.
Yeah, portions
of it. Not the whole.
But the Quaalude testimony.
The key parts,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He'll be cross-examined on that. And as a criminal defense lawyer, I don't know how you prep him deal with that testimony.
It's still a bunch of criminal defense attorneys still saying, who was the idiot lawyer letting him do the deposition in the first place?
Exactly.
Because your biggest deal is never give a deposition.
Don't recall, don't do it.
That's what you always say. Well, I'll tell you what, it's still going to be a very tough week. We'll see what they do and whether or not he actually testifies. Folks, let's go to Chicago, where the city has had more than 760 homicides last year and is suffering a ghastly spate of gun violence, mostly on the south and west sides. Now, there's new data showing that the city is spending hundreds of millions of dollars to settle police misconduct cases. Chicago reporters analyzed the numbers, and they find that most of the lawsuits come from everyday encounters between police and African-American or Latino residents. Between 2011 and 2016, folks, Chicago spent more than $280 million on 943 misconduct lawsuits involving everything from false arrest and illegal searches to serious instances of excessive force. Now, most people have heard of the big ticket settlements, like the $5 million paid to the family of Laquan McDonald. Of course, 17-year-old shot 16 times by cops in October 2014. But the median settlement amount the city pays is around $35,000, like the deal made in April 2016 of a case for false arrest. They paid out $100,000 for an illegal search sex abuse allegation that same month. Now, Chicago rarely borrows enough to pay for the settlements, which means taxpayers are taking a huge financial hit because of high interest rates. Joining us via FaceTime from Chicago is Jonah Newman, the reporter for the Chicago Reporter. Jonah, you know, it's interesting to me, you never hear Sheriff David Clark. You never hear President Donald Trump. You never hear any of these people who love talking about law enforcement say anything about their everyday abuses happening. And also, you never hear any of these conservative fiscal people who are talking about our precious tax dollars. They don't say jack about nearly $300 million being spent by police abuse. And that's just the settlements. It doesn't count the millions of dollars taxpayers are funding to pay the lawyers who defend the cops.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's the heart of why we started this project. We actually launched it last year with lawsuits from 2012 to 2015. We've just added the 2011 and 2016 lawsuits. And you're exactly right, right? We talk about police misconduct as a civil rights issue. Of course, it is a civil rights issue, but I think it's also important to talk about it as a fiscal accountability issue, right? We're the ones paying for this. We're on the hook. And even if you don't live in the neighborhoods that are experiencing the brunt of this police misconduct, you're still paying for it. You're still affected by it. And I think that's what we were trying to show with this project.
It is stunning to me how very few political leaders will say a word about this. They will not chastise police for the millions being spent because of how they act. They will not say a word. They won't condemn. And guess what? You won't hear Jack from the Police Officers Union. You won't hear anything from the National Police Unions as well. Oh, they're amazingly quiet when it comes to these millions of dollars being spent.
Well, and I think the other thing that was pretty surprising to me when we started looking into this is that not only are they not talking about it publicly, but they're also not doing anything about it, right? There are things that they could do. There are other cities, New York, for example, Portland, that actually look at police misconduct lawsuits as, you know, one more piece of the police accountability mechanism, right? You can see, okay, we're spending all, you know, millions of dollars a year on police misconduct lawsuits. Let's look at these lawsuits and figure out what are the trends, what's common among them, right? And what are the maybe policies or practices that we could change that might A, reduce the actual misconduct, and B, reduce the cost of this misconduct the taxpayers are paying year after year. And the city's just not doing that. And you know, coming back to this year, there have been, you know, the Justice Department finished their investigation in January. Before that, the city's inspector general, and before that, the mayor's task force on police accountability have all said, listen, Mayor Emanuel, this is something that your administration should be doing, and they're still not doing it.
General, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so very much, and great job.
Thank you very much for having me.
Real quick, here on Go to Our Panel, George, I'll start with you. In 25 years, this was a previous story from Crane, Chicago. In 25 years, it cost the city of Chicago $662 million in police settlements.
I think you have a Democratic mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who hasn't taken control of the police department. You also have poor training. I'm a former police officer. I can tell you some of these police officers are not trained. When I was a police officer, I had the attitude that we were pretty much bulletproof in that we could handle any situation. And our job was to de-escalate situations, not to escalate situations. That's the way we handled our police work. We were to de-escalate anything and bring it to a peaceful solution. We were more peace officers. But I also have a pet peeve. I cannot stand black uniforms on cops. I think we had a militarization of the police departments during the last 10 years where everybody thinks they're a SWAT team member.
Last 10 years?
Well, everybody dresses like they're a SWAT team member.
If you go tell Fred Hampton's family when a cop stormed them in 1969, they can tell you right now that was the case then as well.
That was the case there.
Some of these cases are not a case of training, even though you're right. There should be more training, but do you really need to be trained not to shoot somebody in the back five times down in South Carolina?
Well, it's top down.
Because the problem with dealing with this is it gets us into the.
Afraid before, when they have a job, they're afraid of. They should quit. I agree with you. They should quit. This is not a job.
My father was in law enforcement. I mean, this is not a job for you if you're afraid, okay? It gets us into the subject of race and policing and racism in America when we talk about the disproportionate stops on African Americans. That's the subject of police unions don't want to talk about.
Scott, real quick.
The juxtaposition here is amazing and very dysfunctional. On one hand, you have one of the highest homicide rates in the city. You have police officers on just day-to-day duty being sued for just their day-to-day interaction. Yep. So it's part training, but it's dysfunctional because it's not reducing the homicide
rate. Real quick, you can't retrain racism. That's pretty simply put. You can't.
You're not born with it either.
Right.
You're trained in racism.
Well, environmentally, as well as your home. I mean, one thing that we're seeing is you can't retrain it.
You can't train it.
We can talk about training all we want.
We had a case in Washington Washington, D.C., where a white police officer arrested a black lady for having a party for a noise ordinance. I think everybody in the department wants to take that case back. It wouldn't happen. You're absolutely right. But the black officer in the car should have stopped it on the spot.
I gotta go to break right now, but also you mentioned the Democratic mayor in Chicago. New York paid a whole bunch of money on the Republican Rudy Giuliani.
Exactly.
I'm just saying that ain't a Democrat or Republican thing.
It's a
police thing.
It's a police thing.
Coming up next on News 1 Now, we'll talk about the issue of hate in America, how some moms are trying to put a stop to it. That's next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Approximately 8,000 hate crimes involving the use of a gun are committed in the U.S. each year. That's more than 20 every single day. Tweet that, Donald Trump. Two organizations, Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, have declared this as hashtag Disarm Hate Week that will last today through Sunday, June 18th. Now, this week was selected because today marks the 1 year since the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. And June 17th marks 2 years since the mass shootings at the Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. During Disarm Hate Week, the organization's pledged to honor the lives of those killed in hate-fueled gun violence, speak out against hate crimes committed with guns, and demand that our lawmakers implement common sense gun legislation. Joining us right now with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, Reverend Sharon Risher, whose mom, Ethel Lance, was killed in the Emanuel AME Church, and Lucy McBath, mother of Jordan Davis, who was killed at a gas station in Jacksonville, Florida, over loud music from a car. Reverend, why is this week so important for you?
It's important because we need America to understand that whether it's homophobia, misogyny, religious intolerance, or whatever, that we live in this country and we demand a place where we could be safe and to believe what we believe, not to be killed because of the color of our skins. And this is happening because of the widespread of gun violence in America. And I don't want people to ever forget that.
Lucy?
Good morning, Roland. It's always good to talk to you. And to really kind of, you know, fall on the heels of what Reverend Risher has said is that, you know, we've come to a boiling point in this country where, you know, there no more excuses. We've got to do something about the violent culture, and in particular what disproportionately happens in communities of color. Since we've seen, you know, President Trump in office, there's a...
Looks like we have an issue with the...
You know, a lot of hate crime. Pardon?
No, go right ahead. You broke up there, but go right ahead.
Oh, I was just saying we have, a huge problem with... intolerance, racial intolerance, and a lot of that is fueled out through gun violence. So we've got a cultural problem here. It's got to be addressed. It has to be dealt with, and that's what Reverend Risher and I intend to do. We're fighting this culture all the way.
Reverend Risher, you, of course, the last 8 years under President Barack Obama, you oftentimes had his administration responding to these issues. We saw what took place in Portland with the stabbing death. Took the president 3 days to say anything. No statement from the White House whatsoever. Nothing from the podium as well. Also, same thing. You have virtual silence when it comes to this Department of Justice. Do you believe that we're now operating in a space where we have an administration right now that will say very little, and people cannot look to them to be a leader on this issue?
Yes, I believe this administration does not have any idea of what this gun violence problem is about. They're a part of the problem that we have. So as grassroots people, we have to know that the government is not going to protect us, and we have to galvanize ourselves to stop the violence committed against people of color for whatever reasons.
Lucy,
we have to do this. We can't wait for them.
Lucy, final comment.
Final comment is that people have to understand the only way to truly change what we see happening in the country, we've got to go beyond the rallies in the streets. We've got to go beyond the prayer vigils. We have to be part of the change. We've got to start running for office. We've got to start making sure that we're in the polls, because our interests have to be represented, and we have to be accountable for doing that. our own communities.
All right, Lucy McBath, Reverend Richard, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, reconstruction workout. Very important. Lord Jesus, Eugene really needs this segment. Next, News One Now, TV One. I'm
down. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, the first official day of summer is fast approaching, but you still have time to get your beach body right. Our next guest has developed the Reconstruction Live Workout Plan. Is that it? Live or live? Reconstruction Live, what is it?
Live.
Okay, I thought so, because you sure ain't dead. All right, it calls for using body weight as a primary source of resistance, assisting with weight loss, improving body functionality, and gradually growing lean body mass. Joining us to talk about this is a fitness trainer, an America Ninja Warrior contestant, Will Washington. Okay, Will, so how does thing work? How does this work?
Okay, so I'm from an old school train of thought. I believe that old exercises work. We just put new names on old stuff.
What you doing,
and
flipping tires and stuff? What?
We can flip tires, but no. I believe in like push-ups, running, sit-ups, all of that. However, the difference is I ask myself the question, everybody can do a push-up, whether it's modified or unmodified. How can I make a push-up more interesting? And so what I decided
That don't
to do,
look interesting, Will.
Well, okay, so that's a little more advanced. Okay, that's a little more advanced, but that's a great case in point.
Okay.
Where, all right, can you travel with a push-up? I can add what's called a mountain climber, which means I'll do a push-up and then I'll bring my knees in, because now I'm not only working my chest and arms, now I've brought my stomach into it, I brought my legs into it, but I'm still doing push-ups.
Okay.
Or I do a step-up, which means I'm doing a push-up and I'll bring my foot up to my hand.
So all what you're talking about also doesn't require machines?
It does not. No, you can do it right in the privacy of your own home, or you can do it in the gym. Or if you want some light weights, you can do it with weights as well.
George, you do any of this?
No.
All right. Lauren?
That's a tough one.
Lauren, you doing any of this? No. Lauren, you do push-ups?
No, just treadmill. I'm boring. Just treadmill.
So the First Lady Michelle Obama didn't inspire you to do push-ups?
You know what? She should have. Her arm should have, but not quite.
Now, let me say this. Everyone can do it.
Mm-hmm. Scott can't.
Yes, he can. Now, see, I have a rule in my gym where the word can't is the worst word you can say to me.
Exactly. Scott can't do it.
You can curse me out. You can say all the other words, but you can't say can't. Why? Because just because it's hard doesn't mean you can't do it.
Scott can't do it.
No, it's just difficult.
One of the things me and my trainer do is we do the Thai boxing for a half hour, and then we go through this kind of aerobic core workout that you're doing, not exactly that sophisticated,
right.
So you get a totality of the workout. And during that workout, we constantly talk about diet and how important that is to losing weight and building muscle. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so diet is 90% of the mission. 90%.
What he's on there, he's just doing, that's just
90%
of getting in great shape.
See, you can exercise all day, but if your food is crap, then your workouts are useless. You're wasting your time. I can say it straight out. You're wasting your time. You can work as hard as you want, and if you go home and eat a box of donuts, eat some cookies or whatever,
it's gone.
You have undone all of your work.
Or pie.
It's really common sense. Mm-hmm. It's really common sense. I believe in common sense. I keep it simple. It looks complicated, but it really is simple.
So how long is this workout?
It can range because there is a HIIT, which is high intensity interval training.
Right.
Involved into it.
And so with HIIT, you can work out less amount of time as opposed to some people like, oh no, I got to do this hour.
Exactly. Now, I would suggest for effectiveness, at least 20 minutes.
Okay.
I can make you feel like you worked out for an hour in 10.
Okay.
You give me 20, you might feel like you lost weight after you left the gym.
Very intense, I tell you.
It can, however, most of my clientele are women over 50.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in early 60s.
Okay. Wow.
And while I do set a pace.
Right.
I do set a pace, and it's a ridiculous pace that I set on purpose.
Right.
I never force anybody to do what you're not capable of doing.
Okay, real quick. So you talked about that. A good breakfast start off. A good breakfast. That's a healthy breakfast to kick your day off with.
Well, if you want some healthy calories, I would suggest oatmeal. Oatmeal is always good. Mm-hmm. And then just some fruits. Stay away from orange juice. Believe it or not, orange juice has more sugar in it than soda.
Okay.
And so just fresh fruit, water, oatmeal.
All right. Where do folks get more information?
You can find me on Facebook at James Washington, on Instagram at Reconstruction, Body Reconstruction, and Reconstruction.com, and also on Twitter at Reconstruction.
All right. Will, we appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right, back on News One Now in 60 seconds.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out times. New Orleans Pelicans, Drew Holiday turns 27. Comedian Lil Duval, that crazy fool, turns 40. Actress Ella Joyce turns 63. All right, y'all. On this day in history, 1967, the banning of interracial marriage in Virginia is deemed unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Loving v. Virginia case. 1970, the National Black NBA Association is founded. In 1971, Roberta Flack's You've Got a Friend became her first song to appear on the Billboard Hot 100. All right, y'all, this weekend, of course, I was in Houston. My parents celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. We had a fantastic, fantastic time. They should be playing video right now. I don't know what the holdup is. Yeah, I'm like, come on, play the video. We had a very, very good time. It was packed. And then I shocked them, Scott. Brought the OJs in the house.
Bring in the pain.
Brought the OJs. They were not expecting that one. And I kept it secret. They had no idea, Lauren. Only a handful of folks knew. That's Walter cute. Williams with the OJs, hugging my mom there. My dad giving him some dap. See, that's right. That's called good DNA right
what
there.
Did they say?
Both of them, dad is 70, mom be 70 in November. And wow. So. We had a great time. And so congratulations to Reginald and Imelda Martin. 50 years of marriage. And look at that. Good looking son right there, baby.
That's a cap, isn't he?
No, don't even try it.
Okay.
My dad broke two out.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.